This is the Kratom Science Podcast. I'm your host, Brian Gallagher, blog and social media writer for KratomScience.com, your source for all things Kratom. For episode one, my guest is Gabrielle Kalea. She's a bank fraud investigator, Kratom consumer, and activist from Buffalo, New York. On Twitter, she goes by Gabaroo13. This is her Kratom story.
Okay, so I've been using Kratom, wow, for quite a while now. I'd like to say at least 7 years now. I believe I was about 20, and I'm 27 now. So, around 7 years, maybe even a little longer because I'm going to be 28 in February. And I had a lot of different reasons, you know, for starting to take it. It was actually introduced to me by a friend who, you know, swore by it. You know, he suffered from depression, anxiety, all that good fun stuff. He heard that, you know, I needed a little help because he had known, you know, what I was dealing with, the depression, the anxiety. He had been there and he found a lot of relief in Kratom. You know, and it was funny because prior to him ever bringing it up to me, I had done my own research and I was looking for, you know, like a natural alternative to prescription medication, antidepressants, all that. I'm not into it, you know? And I did a little reading and I came across Kratom and I was like, nah, you know, this sounds too good to be true. This, I don't trust this. This doesn't, you know, and I really didn't even think to look deeper into it.
I get that reaction a lot when I try to tell people about it. They're like, okay, whatever.
Exactly. People don't believe it. It's what you're telling me, a tea leaf is going to, you know, help relieve my anxiety and my depression and, you know, help me feel better. And nah, you know, they don't believe it. I didn't believe it. But he invited me over to his house to try some. He said he'd brew up a big batch of Kratom tea and we could kick back and, you know, have a glass. And I never looked back. It changed my life for the better. You know, I couldn't believe it. You know, I didn't have a need for everything else I was doing and using to cope with, you know, feeling depressed and anxious and all that. And it was still to this day, I'm amazed. I really, truly am. You know, something that can help me, you know, have quality of life and just live a normal life that has no, for me anyways, no negative side effects, no, you know, it's just incredible. I'll die on this hill that Kratom is amazing.
A deadly drug or a life-saving substance? There is a nationwide debate tonight. It's come to Southwest Florida on Kratom.
If I were to take Kratom right now, what would I feel or experience?
You would feel a quick down, and probably very shortly thereafter that you would start seeing the psychoactive effects, the hallucinations, visualizations, things of that nature.
You know what I really like to kind of stress to people? Now, I don't judge, you know, everybody's got a vice of some sort, whether you're smoking cigarettes or you're having a drink, you know, having a beer, you know, before bed or whatever. We all have things that help us get through this crazy thing called life, right? But I hate feeling like I'm under the influence of something. I couldn't tell you the last time I had an alcoholic beverage. I couldn't tell you. So for someone like me, you know, a lot of people might see me, you know, taking Kratom and they might think, oh, what are you trying to do? You're trying to, you know, be under the influence of something. You want to be high. You don't want to be, you know, sober. And no, that's not at all true. I'm the person that doesn't drink. So if that tells, tell me about it. Like, I don't know if you remember a tweet that I had made a few months back and I said, you know, if Kratom is so similar to like meth or heroin or whatever it is that you guys are comparing it to, it's amazing that I'm doing as well as I am. It's at my job, you know, on the road in my car, like, wow, I can really handle myself. You know, it's just, and I was being sarcastic. I'm just trying to, you know, highlight the fact that no, Kratom is nothing at all like those things. Kratom could truly be a part of everybody's health and well-being regimen. You know, besides kids, because I don't think they should be, you know, really taking any kind of substances like that, coffee even. But it could really, truly be a part of every. There's no reason why we can't all take Kratom. You know, I mean, it's just one of those things that can be a part of your, you know, daily regimen, or not even weekly or monthly or whatever the case may be, whatever works for you, I feel like everyone could benefit from it. I really do. And it's not like I walk around and I encourage, you know, everyone to take it, because if they don't need it, an extra expense, yeah, then, you know, why would they? But I shout it from the rooftops that this stuff, it's great. It's not at all what you're reading about, you know, and yeah.
So daily, like, how much do you take a day?
So it's so funny, because for the first couple years of me taking Kratom, I really wasn't even keeping track of how much I was taking. I wasn't taking a lot, yeah, because I had heard, you know, 1,000 times over that less is more. And that still rings true to this day. Less is absolutely more when it comes to Kratom. I probably take around, I'd say around maybe 10 to 15 grams a day.
Okay. And capsule?
Actually, no, I toss and wash. And you know what's funny is I always use a bottle of water, and I drink so much water now. I mean, in the last 7 years of me, you know, taking Kratom, I've tried every type of method there is. I've taken them in capsule form. I've done the toss and washing. I've brewed batches of tea that, you know, I've done it all. But the reason I choose to just toss and wash is because it's just so convenient. You know, you just put a little, take your little tape measuring spoon and throw it on a little piece of paper and just toss it back. And then I always finish like an entire bottle of water every time I do it. So I'm getting like all this water. I never used to drink water. And like, you know, it's just great. But I know a lot of people can't stand the taste. So
when I make a tea, it's a little bit bitter, but when you put honey in it, it tastes fine. It tastes better than that kombucha shit.
Oh, that stuff's nasty, let's be honest. But yeah, little honey, little lemon.
That gets me the question, like, did you ever have any side effects that were just maybe dietary?
Okay, now, and this is me being 100% honest with you right now, and because I feel like people find this hard to believe. They think that there has to be something, but in all honesty, in the last 7 years, I've not had one negative side effect from my Kratom use. Nothing. And yeah. I mean, maybe if I got a headache or something, maybe it was caused from the Kratom and I chalked it up to, you know, my sinuses or something like that, but I highly doubt that. Nothing. I've never gone through anything that it jumped out at me that Kratom might be causing this, ever. No issues. And I hear that from a lot of people, actually. That's not to say that, you know, it can't cause negative side effects in some people, but I don't think that that's, you know, a common thing.
Do you think toss and wash is better for the effects? Like, does it make it stronger to do that, but instead of a tea? Do you think?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't. Maybe it does, and I just don't really notice that much of a difference. But no, I get the same, you know, kind of effects no matter how I do it. Now, let's say I take capsules. The effects might take a little bit longer to kick in, but they, you know, not much longer, maybe 10 minutes or so. It's such a funny thing because it is so benign. You know, it's so benign, but it works so well. It's just kind of like such a unique little thing, you know?
It really is, yeah.
It really is. And I feel like that's why we are in the situation that we're in, you know, with it. I feel like people don't really know what to make of it. I feel like a lot of us don't know what to make of it. But, you know, I'm going based off of how I feel, you know, and what my life has been like since I discovered it. And I have nothing bad to say. But, you know, there would be no reason for me to not take it because it's working.
And kind of that gets into the question of why do you think they're trying to keep it illegal? I think it's because it works and it's harmless and it's cheap and it's not patented and, you know, owned by anybody yet. I mean, is that what you think about the whole political situation?
You know what? That's exactly what I think it is. That's exactly what I think it is. I think that as awful as it sounds, you know, for us to be thinking that they don't want what's best for us, that they prefer to be lining their pockets, you know, than to, I know, right? Oh, wow. We all know this by now. But
yeah,
it's
no,
sad. It's a sad reality to have to face. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people are in denial about that. So, you know, they listen to this negative propaganda that's coming out about Kratom, and they believe it because they're in denial and they don't want to believe that, you know, they don't have our best interests at heart. But I truly don't think that they do. And I do think that this is all about money and all about control. Absolutely.
It's just, to me, it's so obvious that all of this is on behalf of the drug companies, and the FDA obviously has people like Gottlieb just went into Pfizer. What do you think about Scott Gottlieb? I'll ask you that.
I'll tell you what I think about Scott Gottlieb. I would love to ask him, you know, how he sleeps at night, you know? Honestly, I'm kind of at a loss for words that somebody who, you know, he's taken a position of, you know, he took the Hippocratic Oath, for goodness sakes. Yeah. You know, he swore
he's
to do
MD.
No harm.
He's definitely an MD, yeah.
He absolutely is, and he swore to do no harm. And what is he doing? You know, by pushing this false narrative that something that is helping millions of people now, you know, what kind of person do you have to be to push that narrative and know that you're potentially taking away, you know, an alternative for people that's allowing them to live their lives normally, peacefully, you know, contently. If I don't know if that's a word, but I mean, this man, he battled cancer. He's a father, and you would just expect him to have a little bit more compassion and try to be a little bit more understanding, you know? I mean, and if you want me to be like brutally honest right now, if you take a look at the Kratom community and the people that make up the Kratom community, it's a lot of middle age and older people.
Definitely.
People who, you know, have a lot of health issues. You know, I read somewhere once that the majority of Kratom consumers are, you know, they're well-educated folks from middle America, you know, or middle-aged folks, things like that. And it's,
I think the average age is my age, which is 43. That's an old average age.
I'll be honest with you. I couldn't really tell you a single person who takes Kratom that's even close to my age. I'm 27. I'm not, you know, a spring chicken or anything, but my problem is that, and I hope this doesn't come off the wrong way, but I feel like the community of people, I feel like they're easy to ignore in a way. If that's not the way I see it, I think that's the way, you know, our government and things like that see it. Like, the people who are, you know, all addicted to heroin and things like that, they're all, a lot of them, they're younger, and they're what I'm trying to say is that, you know, like younger people, you know, early 20s, things like that, they're the biggest consumers. They buy the most stuff. They're everything's like geared towards them. You know, the millennials, everything's, you know what I mean? And like, it almost feels like the people who have a voice and who have power and, you know, are in positions of power and are in positions of, you know, being able to make a change and things like that, they're not representative, like you said, of the majority of people. They're out of touch with what real life is like and what, you know, real people's needs are and what kind of struggles we face every day. They're out of touch. So how are these people going to be able to help us, you know? How are they, Dr. Drew, you are, you know, a celebrity doctor. You don't have any idea. I'm sorry. My jaw hit the floor when I heard what he had said about, you know, chronic pain patients seeking treatment. My jaw hit the floor. Borderline druggies?
I feel like the pain management community that was on Facebook that was going wild because we didn't continue the conversation.
I could not do that. I couldn't do it.
We'll bring an expert in. We'll have you can have a debate on another day. And
No. This is not an environment for debate. This is an environment to address issues that people
have
questions.
Yeah, I wish you could fix it all.
I wish
you could.
Too.
And I'm sorry for all the people that were upset.
So, Claudia, welcome here. First of all, I want to just dispense a little business and offer you an apology. I got emotional at the end of the last podcast, and there's a long history of that emotion, and it was inappropriate what I was saying to my wife. It was backstage a comment, and if it hurt anybody, I deeply apologize.
Let me just say, on behalf of the millions of people suffering with pain and on behalf of doctors who have been terrorized, I accept any apology given by anybody because we're in such a dire situation.
I mean, not only is that incredibly unprofessional, it's incredibly not compassionate. It's just like, how can you be so insensitive? You know, I mean, I've seen people take their own lives, you know, due to this whole situation where we're denying, you know, pain patients their medication due to the heroin epidemic and things like that. I've watched my own friends take their lives. I've read suicide notes of people who couldn't take the pain anymore. Don't tell me that those people were borderline druggies. They were just regular people looking to live a normal life, looking to raise their children and go to their job and get out of bed, for goodness sakes. Don't tell me that those individuals are borderline druggies when they're just regular people. And I couldn't believe it, Brian, you know, when I read that. I really couldn't believe it. Then again, I shouldn't be so surprised.
A guy whose only tool is a hammer, he sees everything as a nail, and he's an addiction specialist, which is a good. He does good for the people that, but now he's become a celebrity, so he does podcasts. That's his main job, is he does a bunch of podcasts, and he has to, like, say things for everybody that calls in. But he's probably good at getting people who are addicted to drugs off drugs. That doesn't mean everybody who uses drugs are addicted to drugs.
I mean, and that's a big thing for me, too, that I could get really into, is just the whole idea of what addiction is in general. And oh my gosh. I mean, I could get into this, but I don't really like to, because when I give my opinion on, you know, how I feel towards addiction and substance abuse or use or whatever, I feel like people feel it discredits me a little bit, because then they think to themselves, oh, well, then of course, like, you're an advocate for Kratom and you support Kratom use because you'd advocate for any drug. And that's not true. You know, I believe we should end the world on the world. I believe we should end the war on drugs. You know, it causes more strife than anything else, and this can be, you know, this has been proven. But that doesn't mean that I condone, you know, doing heroin or meth or coke or anything like that. I just don't feel that it should be, you know, punishable by law necessarily. I don't know. I just think it's a matter of freedom, you know, and again, I don't really like to get too into that, because I don't want people thinking that, you know, I'm a big advocate for drug use. I'm not, you know, but I don't even drink alcohol. I'm not one to.
I mean, I don't think people really do drugs because they hear somebody advocate for it either, because I just think it's like a personal kind of, this makes me feel good and I'm going to do too much of it. That means I'm an addict. You know, I just think it's like, it's the whole attitude towards it is like, in this country is just wrong to me. I agree with you. That it should be decriminalized. And we've even seen, like, in Portugal, they had a huge heroin epidemic and they decriminalize it. And they have people go out and give people methadone. They have, like, nurses, they're in nurse outfits, and they carry buckets of methadone needles, and they administer it to, like, homeless heroin addicts, and the rate of heroin use, overdose deaths, everything has gone down in Portugal. They decriminalize all drugs, and the drug war is clearly, clearly not working, and it's clearly still, the laws are still in place, clearly because of the industries that have interest in it, like the prison industry, the pharmaceutical industry.
It all comes back around to that. It's money. It's all about money, you know? When drugs are illegal, like you just said, it allows for us to have police and judges and lawyers and the, you know, everything, the people that work in the prisons and all that. It generates money. It generates jobs, you know? Like, it's, of course they don't want to end the war on drugs. People would be out of work, and there wouldn't, you know, like, it's working for us. And that's why things are the way that they are. It's not working for us, the people. It's working for our system. And that's why it continues. And until more people start to speak out and think the way that we do on this, you know, it's never going to stop.
We know a lot about dealing with drug addiction, even though the people who are addicted make up a small percentage. The problem is that we just haven't had the courage to be honest with people about drugs.
But I also wanted to kind of make a quick point, going back to the whole thing about addiction. I think it's incredibly important for people to realize that, now, everybody defines addiction in different ways, which I think is a problem in and of itself. But anyways, my definition of addiction is, you know, engaging in a behavior that you kind of can't stop doing. You're choosing not to stop. You just feel the need to keep on doing it. And it's bringing about negative consequences in your life. That's my idea of what addiction is. And if I'm being totally honest with you, Kratom has done the exact opposite for me. I do feel that it's kind of a habit in a way, but I don't view that as a bad thing because it's not brought any negative consequences, but quite the opposite. It's changed my life for the better. So why, let's pretend I am addicted to it, if we have to use that word. Why is that a problem? You know what I'm saying? Like, why would me being dependent on something that's benefiting me be a problem for me or anyone else? It really, I can't say enough about how it helps, because I'm just thinking back to what my life was like before I discovered it, and it's like night and day. I think it's important to note that Kratom has not cured me of any of this at all, and I still deal with these things and the, you know, symptoms of these things on a regular basis. It's not going to go away. Kratom's not going to take it away, but it makes it bearable. Yeah. And I can't tell you exactly how it helps. All I know is that it does.
Many women have premenstrual discomfort and irritability, but if it's affecting your ability to do your job and maintaining your relationships, you might consider the possibility of PMDD. Premenstrual dysphoric disorder. PMDD is a condition where a woman has pronounced emotional and physical problems that are closely linked to her menstrual cycle. Be careful not to mistake PMDD for PMS, or premenstrual syndrome, the condition that affects women in the days leading up to their periods. While PMDD can bring some of the same symptoms as PMS, it's more severe. PMDD is caused by a physical imbalance of hormones in the body. Symptoms can range from depression and anxiety to severe mood swings and irritability and muscle tension.
The premenstrual dysphoric disorder is a very difficult thing to deal with. And there's really not all that much support out there. You know, it's kind of not something that's really talked about that much. It's not something that doctors know a whole lot about, you know. But it wreaks havoc on my life. And there will be times where I wake up in the middle of the night and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, I'm sure you see me on Twitter. It's like 2-3 in the morning. You're like, what is this girl doing up so early? And it's because, you know, when it hits, because of the premenstrual dysphoric disorder, it's almost like, now I struggle with depression all the time, but the premenstrual dysphoric disorder, it's almost like it becomes more severe around my menstrual period, you know? Okay. So it's like an extra slap of depression, you know? And around that time period, I oftentimes will wake up in the middle of the night and I feel, it's so weird, I feel like feelings of like dread, and just, I feel so low, and it's really hard to explain. It's just, I feel awful. And I'll go and I'll either, you know, drink a glass of Kratom tea, or I'll toss and wash a couple of grams, and within a half hour, 45 minutes, I don't feel like a million bucks, but it somehow allows me to kind of relax enough, and it eases my anxiety and things just enough to where I can breathe and, you know, put things into perspective and tell myself, okay, Gabrielle, you know what this is. This is your hormones. They're out of whack. They hate you.
Yeah.
And listen to this. So I've battled with this for a long, long time. And I actually didn't even know that I had this until after I had discovered Kratom. And I think that's because Kratom really gave me like this motivation to like better myself in my life. And I wanted to figure out, you know, what's going on with me? What's going on inside my body? Like, let's get better, you know, let's start taking better care of ourselves and just, you know, and so Kratom kind of gave me that little push even. I started to feel better. And so with that, I was like, you know, I'm going to try to make some positive changes. I want to find out. I'm going to go get a physical. I'm going to get checked out by my doctor. I'm going to talk to him about the issues I've been having. You know, before I was just like miserable, didn't even want to make any changes or anything. I just sat there and, you know, in despair all the time and just figured out, this is my life. I'm just depressed and I'm Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh. That's just me. But no, and I went to the doctor and I discovered that I had this. And when you know, like you just said, it just makes things so much better. You're able to, you can figure out what you need to do to, you know, make things better for yourself. And I owe a lot of that to Kratom too, as crazy as that sounds.
Do you have a doctor that you can talk to about the fact that you take Kratom?
Actually, no.
Okay. See, that's one of the things that I think it should be out in the open and legal and regulated so we can all talk to our doctors and say, hey, this is what I take.
Well, now, I was honest with my doctor, and I did tell him that I take it because I want to be upfront and I want to, you know, and he, of course, bought into the whole negative propaganda.
Yeah.
This was the interesting thing about it, right? Now, I've been going to this doctor since I was a baby. This guy's been my general, you know, doctor for 27 years now. And so I would have to think that if he truly thought that I was doing something that would really be harming me, I have to believe that he would, you know, he would have been a little bit more adamant about telling me that I shouldn't be doing it. When I told him that I take Kratom, it almost felt like he felt like he had to say, don't take it, you know, but it didn't seem convincing. He didn't seem to even be convinced himself that Kratom was something that was that bad, because he certainly didn't really make it that much of a point to tell me I shouldn't be doing it. It was kind of just like, don't do that. That's about it, you know? I mean, if I had told him, oh, I'm shooting up heroin every day, I'm sure that he would have had a little bit more, you know, of a response, but he didn't. He just was kind of like, nope, don't do that. And I'll tell you something, though. I did find a new doctor. I did a little bit of research. I talked to a few people, and I was like, you know, I want someone who's going to listen to me and really understand why I'm doing the things that I'm doing, instead of someone who comes into the room and looks at me for 2 seconds and throws me a bottle of antidepressants and, you know.
Yes.
It pains me to say this because, you know, like I just said, the doctor that I had been going to was, I had gone to him for 27 years. I thought that we had a good doctor-patient relationship. I thought the guy cared about me, you know what I mean? But I quickly kind of realized as I got older and into my 20s and I was going to appointments alone and this and that, I quickly started to realize that this guy doesn't really care to do what's right. He seems to be in this for whatever benefits that he gets by prescribing things that I don't need. I mean, you could severely negatively impact a person's life. So, like, let me tell you something. I have 4 people in my immediate family, and every single one of us, they'd kill me if I said this because they, you know, 4 of us, and every single one of us go to the same doctor, the one I've been talking about, and he prescribed antidepressants to every single one of us.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have a really hard time believing that all 4 of us are depressed.
Yeah.
He's getting kickbacks from it. That's what it is. And my dad went in there and told him he's been getting headaches, bad headaches, and he prescribed him Prozac? What? What?
Yeah. That veers into, like, I always try to give people the benefit of the doubt, but that kind of veers into charlatanism, you know.
Dealing with a person's psychological health here. Those can, you know, really affect people.
Yeah, they don't give a shit about a Hippocratic Oath, really.
No, I can't even believe that we're having this discussion. I can't even believe that. That's my biggest thing. I can't even believe that what's happening is happening, and that kratom is even on anyone's radar. It's great, but it's not something that I ever thought was going to be blow up like this, and people were going to be so up in arms about it, and it was going to be touted as this big dangerous thing. I just can't even believe it. It's so silly to me.
Yeah, it's like we all normal people have to unfortunately we have other things to do, but we have to fight ridiculousness so we can have a sane society.
Right.
Like, that's right. I like the kratom movement because I follow a lot of people, and I get a lot of Republican stuff, Democrat, Bernie, everybody, and we're all together no matter who you vote for. And it's like, to me, it's like, that's how I can participate in a sane way and not get bogged down in electoral politics.
Absolutely. Honestly, this whole thing, as silly as I think it is, and as much as I wish we hadn't been dealing with this for the past however many years, I just got to say, this whole thing, the advocacy, being a part of the kratom community, everything has impacted my life so much. I mean, 7 years, and in a good way. 7 years ago when, you know, my friend introduced me to this stuff, I didn't think it would be like this. Now I'm part of this amazing community with some of the coolest, most intelligent people I've ever spoken to in my life. You know, like you said, we all come together, we work together. You know, we're making history. I mean, you know, we stopped a ban. We stopped the DEA from banning it and making it a Schedule I stuff. That is remarkable. You know,
that is
historical. Really are a force. It is.
Yeah.
We're a force. And I've never been a part of something like this before. And it's changed me. I feel more confident in who I am and in my knowledge on things. I feel like I can talk to people that, you know, I otherwise really maybe wouldn't have talked to because I don't have things in common or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
I'm kind of a shy, kind of a reserved person. And this has really brought me out of my shell. So kratom has done even more for me than just help me combat my depression, anxiety, and, you know, everything else. It's done even more. And it's amazing. It really, truly is. I can't say it enough.
This has been the Kratom Science Podcast. For more information on all things Kratom, visit KratomScience.com. Thanks to our guest, Gabrielle Kalea. She can be found on Twitter at Gabaroo13.
The music is by Risey. The song is Memories of Thailand.
Links to the clips used in the podcast can be found in the description. The Kratom Science Podcast was written and produced by me, Brian Gallagher. Like and subscribe, see us on Twitter at Kratom Science, and check out KratomScience.com. Take care.